Chapter 26 Jack 5 Jack Sun-Sun Valano, truthless of Shinovar, moved quickly in the night. Around him tents glowed from within like massive luminescent fungi. Where there was light, there were shadows, and where there were shadows, he was unseen. He paused, crouching in the darkness, peering through the Devar camp. He couldn't believe that they had returned so quickly and with such force. Even in the darkness, he could see the banners waving with the symbol of House Rhaenar. The southern nobles, seeing the movements of the wind, had proposed allegiance with Tal Shiach. There was no longer any pretense, no reason for Devar to accept the rule of an idiot king. Tal Shiach had arrived back at Vaden City earlier in the day. Avin wouldn't survive the night. Jack scuttled away, slipping over smoothed rock, moving silently through the camp. He had finally finished with Avin's list. The last few names had, surprisingly, been men in Tal Shiach Devar's army. Their deaths would soon be discovered. Yet strangely, Tal Shiach's own name had not been on the list. Why not have him assassinate Lord Tal Shiach? In Shinovar, killing the leader of an army would be immaterial. Clan leadership was soundly structured, and no army would falter from the loss of one man, no matter how important. In the East, however, things were different. Leaders often provided sole inspiration for their men. Perhaps often realized that this situation was different. Yakoved had been shattered and unified simultaneously. The houses had risen against one another, then had solidified behind a single leader. Even if that man died, an army would still sit outside of Vaden City. Yes, killing Tal Shiach would end one threat, but even if another civil war ensued, one thing would be universally understood. Avin could not remain on the throne. Jack could see it now, Tal Shiach's pavilion. Getting in would be difficult. Here, the walls were cloth and not stone. Sounds traveled easily, and signs of struggle could be seen by flickering light. Killing Tal Shiach would not solve Avin's basic problem, but it probably wouldn't hurt. The more squabbling, the more confusion, the longer the idiot king would have to plan. Jack leaned down, staying close to the ground, his cheek almost touching the stone beneath. He felt the rock with his fingertips, whispering an apology for the blood he must spill upon it. Avin had given no order to attack Tal Shiach, but Jack's bond was more than simple slavery of body. It required more. It required honor and duty, without the rewards of either. If killing Tal Shiach helped his master, then truth demanded he act. And then he saw them. Four men bearing staves of wood, slowly patrolling the perimeter of Tal Shiach's tent. Men with light skin and familiar clothing. Shin warriors. Jack shrank back into the darkness, surprised. Where had Tal Shiach found Shin willing to serve him? Were they truthless? No, that couldn't be possible. It would be too much of a coincidence. The men held identical staves and walked with familiarity. They were of the same clan. Volnakandan? Trudanashas? Both were clans of the staff. But why would they? Jack felt his palms grow slick against the stone. It had been long since he had faced a true warrior. Too long. There could be only one reason they would consent to guarding Tal Shiach. He must have convinced them that he was in danger from a Shin assassin. They would be watching for one such as Jack. How many more were there? Four alert Shin warriors were enough of a risk on their own, but if there were others... Jack slipped back into the darkness. He would serve his bond foolishly if he got himself killed without orders. He would let Avin decide. Jack frowned as he searched the city. It was busy despite the late hour. The people knew that Talshach's army had returned, and many probably understood what that meant. Already merchants had rushed from the city, offering goods and comforts to the wearied troops. The gates were wide open, a sign from the nobility of Vadenar. They would give up their fool of a king willingly, if it would bring their own safety. Except that king was not to be found. The nobility was visibly disturbed. Their messengers and servants scuttled through the city as bobs of lantern light, searching frantically for their sacrificial monarch. Without proof of his blood, they would not be able to ensure the invaders' goodwill. Jack crouched on a rooftop, watching a particular lantern-lit figure on the streets below. He recognized the man despite his lack of uniform. He was one of Avon's guards, one of those who had appeared to know his king's secret. He had been waiting in the shadows outside Avon's palace, hiding as best an Easterner could manage when the assembled troops of the Vaden nobility had come for the king. The soldier was probably loyal, but he was terrible at sneaking. He constantly looked over his shoulder, and he crept when he should have strolled. Even the other Easterners should have noticed something suspicious about his movements. Jack was surprised that none of the many streetgoers gave the soldier a second look. They were too busy with their own problems to realize that the answer they sought was lurking his way past them on the street. The low stone buildings of Vaden City were perfect for rooftop following, and Jack had no trouble tailing his prey. The man's destination, however, gave him pause. Jack settled down against the firm stone of a roof, crouching and studying the building the soldier entered. The structure was taller than most, though still only one story. Its sloping rock walls glistened with flakes of quartz, and even in the darkness Jack could make out the lavish metal ornamentations on the pillars and doors. In front, a tall bronze statue stood with an outstretched hand, pointing toward the city. In his other hand, the statue held a triangular shield, the Kanaran symbol of justice. Jack pulled back into the shadows, thinking. The statue could only represent one figure, Nael Elin, herald of justice. He was the one Jack's people called Halanatan, stoneborn of blood opal. Jack had always avoided the Ilinra temples. The heathens' common-day perversions were bad enough. He hadn't any desire to know what the clandestine new religions did with the sacred stories of the 10 stoneborn. Yet if Avon was associated with the Church of Nael, it would explain much. Of all the Ilinra cults, the Church of Nael was one of the most secretive yet most powerful. Jack could finally stop wondering how Avon could act so innocently impotent, yet have such good information. Jack dropped from the rooftop into the alley beside. He could not wait. If Avon was truly inside the Ilinra temple, then the king would probably not remain there for long. Avon's smartest course of action was probably flight, and if the king escaped, it could take Jack months to track him down. Jack stepped into the light and adopted the air of urgency he had seen in the postures of so many this night. Hopefully, if someone saw him, they would think him simply another attendant rushing to warn his master's allies of the king's disappearance. He quickly approached the Ilinra temple. He kept his head bowed, partially not to draw attention and partially so he wouldn't have to look up at the paganized image of Nael Elin. How little the heathens understood! Could they not see that the stoneborn were holy? That their images should not be crafted into any substance that was not stone? Even worse, Jack knew of the Kanaran's preference for using the sacred arts. The statue probably hadn't been of bronze when it was first sculpted. For some reason, the use of sacred powers in combination with the creation of a desecrated icon was even worse than most paganisms. The temple's broad gates were not open, but the soldier had entered through a secondary, smaller door. Jack approached this, trying to decide how far he would go to discover the king's location. These men might be Avon's allies. Killing them would be unwise. However, there was also the possibility that they had the idiot king held captive and that the soldier Jack had trailed was a traitor. The small door opened as Jack approached, revealing a darkened hallway beyond. Two men stood in deep blue cloaks, not black, for that was reserved for awakeners. The men had their hoods drawn after the manner of those trying to appear secretive and mysterious.
"We were told that you might come," one of them said in a quiet voice. "You may enter, man of Shinovar. Realize, however, the privilege given you. Many wait years before being allowed admittance to the home of the Sacred Brotherhood."
Jack kept his tongue, wondering if these men understood just how foolish they appeared. If they wished to be secretive, they should have studied the Shin clans of the Blade, clans such as the one Jack had once belonged to. A Shin clan would never have built a massive building in the middle of the city to proclaim how enigmatic it was. Clans of the Blade were unseen, unheard, but deadly. The hallway inside was crafted completely of bronze. Jack stepped onto the metal floor with relief. It was only a short removal from the stone, but it was a welcome one. One of the cloaked figures led him through cramped bronze corridors that twisted around in a spiral, eventually leading him to a doorway encrusted with various gemstones. The only illumination came from a candle held by Jack's guide. The man pushed open the door, and Jack was pleased to see the idiot king inside. Avan wore no robe. In fact, he wore clothing far less extravagant than normal. Sea silks after the noble cut, but unladen by gemstones or jewelry. He wore a deep red cloak with the hood pulled back. The room felt large compared to the tiny hallways, though it was probably only about 15 feet square. It was illuminated by 10 glowing braziers, which cast a Rubicon glow across the metallic walls. Cloaked Brotherhood members knelt along the walls. Avan, however, stood, looking toward 4 bundles of cloth that lay on a raised dais at the back of the room. They were children, Jack realized, cloaked almost completely in dark swathes of sea silk. The youngest was perhaps 10 years old, the eldest a girl that might have been in her late teens. The children sat with their hands forward, trails of sand streaming from clenched fists onto the ground in front of them. Their eyes watched the falling sand. The entire dais, Jack realized, was crafted from a black stone. Onyx.
"No," Jack thought with shock. "That isn't possible."
He hissed quietly in surprise, stepping into the room, studying the children's faces and skin. No, they were not Shin. They were Kanaran, but it was impossible.
"You must find the girl,"
one of the children whispered, not looking up from his streaming sand, not even moving, save to eventually reach over to the pot of sand beside him to grab another handful.
"I know where she is," Avan said, confident.
"You will lose her," the child said. "You will have to find her again. Beware of the Windrunner," the eldest of them said. "I see him. He will not know you, but he could destroy you."
"Who is he?" Avan demanded.
The girl shook her head.
"I see patterns. Too many patterns. All of them point toward danger. You must move quickly, idiot king. Something has gone wrong in the world. It must have a leader. Conqueror, savior, or tyrant, it matters not. There must be unity."
"Now is a time for boldness,"
the boy who had spoken before agreed.
"I see chaos in the patterns. Our protectors have fallen. Someone must make 10 kingdoms into one."
The last handful of sand dropped, and the children did not reach for more. Avan nodded his head slightly, almost a bow, then turned toward Jack.
"Come," he said, striding from the room.
Jack wasn't quick to follow. He stared at the children and at the sand and at the onyx.
"A fabrication," he told himself. They speak nonsense and imitate the patterns of the past. Somehow he couldn't quite convince himself.
Assassin, Avin snapped. Come.
Jack turned and followed. Those were Holotatinal, he said.
Avin raised an eyebrow.
They did as seem shin to me, assassin, he said.
Onyx Seers, Jack said, his voice, though quiet, echoing in the metal hallway. You realize they must be fake. There haven't been Onyx Seers in Kanar since the Ninth Epoch.
Perhaps, Avin said.
They tell you what you want to hear, Jack insisted. They're obviously mimicking the actions of Shinstone shamans.
Avin didn't respond, so Jack tried another tactic.
You should escape, he said. Talshech is guarded by Shin clansmen. I could try to assassinate him, but I would probably fail. Even if I kill him, another will try to take your throne.
Avin shook his head.
You're not going to kill Talshech, he said. Come.
What are you going to do?
Jack demanded as two robed forms opened the doors before them, letting Avin out onto the night street.
You heard the seers, Avin said. It is time for boldness.
Lord Talshech looked slightly less impressive without his shard plate. He was still massive, but much of that mass was contained in an ample gut and stocky legs. Despite the girth, he was well-muscled, but his were the muscles of an aging man whose battles had mostly passed. He looked a little disheveled. He had probably taken Avin's disappearance as a sign that the king had fled. He certainly hadn't expected his enemy to stride into the middle of his camp, accompanied by nothing more than a couple of guards and a solitary Shin assassin. News of the arrival, however, brought crowds. Jack noted a large group of Vedanal noblemen gathering on one side of the camp, their eyes wide with pleasured surprise. Perhaps they had come pleading for their lives or to assure Talshech that their political enemies had been the ones who aided in Avin's disappearance. Avin stood quietly in the night, torches whispering before gusts of wind. What did he expect? That Talshech would accept his surrender? Avin held the throne. Talshech could not let such a threat to his leadership live. Indeed, as soon as Talshech stepped from his tent and saw Avin, the Devar Lord smiled deeply and summoned his shard blade. Those in attendance would witness the murder, but they would not contradict Talshech's inevitable declaration that they had released the country from incompetent rule, that he had performed his act in the name of justice rather than ambition. Talshech stepped forward and swung his blade at the idiot king's head. Avin ducked, nearly falling to the ground as he whipped back his cloak and pulled a sword from beneath its depths. Avin spun behind the surprised Talshech. The idiot king was trained as a warrior. He wasn't masterful, Jack could see that much. Neither was he incompetent. However, no great amount of skill was required to dodge Talshech's arrogant strike. Nor was mastery necessary to spin behind the large man as Avin did, his own shard blade raised high over his head. Avin sheared Talshech's head in half with a single stroke. Avin had probably meant to aim for the neck, but he hit somewhere right below the ear instead. It didn't matter. The blade cut through the large Devar nobleman's head with ease. Talshech's corpse slumped to the ground. The crowd's eyes lingered on it, stunned.
Of course Avin has a sharp blade, Jack realized. He's king. They couldn't have kept one from him, idiot or not. The blade is a sign of nobility.
Avin stood before the crowd, bloodied sword held in firmly in a post-swing posture.
Last night the Almighty appeared to me in a dream, he said loudly.
It took Jack a moment to realize what was wrong. Avin's accent was gone. He sounded normal.
He said he would heal me of my infirm mind, for the three houses needed a leader. Talshech, obviously, was not that leader.
Then Avin stood up straight and dismissed his blade. The idiot king strode forward, stepping over Talshech's body, and walked toward the open city gates. Jack thought that someone might challenge him, but no one did. Jack hurried after Oven, glancing back with apprehension. The collected noblemen were still staring at the corpse.
"Now what?"
Jack asked, turning back to Oven.
"Now," Oven said with a smile, "we wait for them to figure it out. I have another task for you."
"Someone you need dead?"
"No," Oven replied. "Someone I need retrieved."